Just checking to make sure.
Had other commitments and could not make it out with us on this trip.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
It's Representative Ogun here on teleconference in Juneau.
Yes, thank you very much for joining us. We've got you on for the record. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, sir.
With that, I expect the Speaker of the House, Representative Gail Phillips, to join us shortly, and if she gets online, I'd like to give her an opportunity. So please don't be offended if she gets on and I give you a timeout to have her address us also. And today, of course, the purpose of this hearing is in response to the disaster that occurred this past summer in this area because of the low salmon that were returning, and not only this area, but including also the lower Kuskokwim. And that prompted the Governor Knowles to declare these two regions a disaster. Following that, the coordinated response teams were formed, headed by Jim Sanders from DCR in Anchorage, and that included, and I'll acknowledge those folks at this time here in this area. The response partnership members were Jeff Carrier, sorry if I mispronounced your name, manager of the Bristol Bay Borough, Adelheid Herman, fishery coordinator for Bristol Bay Borough also, Judy Nelson, director of Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation, Robin Samuel, president of the Economic Development Corporation. We also have Dave McClure, director of the Regional Housing Authority, and also Terry Hepperly, from the director of the Bristol Bay Native Association, including Andy Golia, who's the Economic Development Planner for the association. Tom Gardner, mayor of the city of Clarks Point, Chris Laddick, mayor of Dillingham, and Moses Critch, also mayor of the city of Tolbiac. We also have Walt Reed, manager of Lake and Penborough, Mary Stadium from the Southwest Municipal Conference, John Purcell, administrator, city of Iquique, Rick Schoenberg, mayor of the city of Chicoutimi, Sonny Grecian, mayor, city of Pilot Point, Tom Hawkins, the director of BBNC, including Prefon Anguson, and also Don Nielsen, also substituted in his behalf. And with us today, we also have Debbie Tennyson, coordinator from the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, working with Jim Sanders. And a lot of work was performed by these team members. They met throughout the summer and fall and try to include everybody, try to give everybody an input. And they put together a plan for funds to be distributed under the Magnuson-Stevens Act. That part, and we'll hear the specifics of that plan today. The plan was presented to the Commerce Department of Commerce, U.S. in Washington, D.C., and the members of the Bristol Bay CRP, those members that I acknowledge, spent many, many hours in meetings and putting a plan together, which will be reviewed this morning and discussed. And again, I thank on behalf of the committee here at the House, thank these people for doing a job to put a plan together. And with that, before I start, I'd like to acknowledge again the members from the House CRA that took time out of their family and also their other committee responsibilities to come out here with us and observe and listen and also participate in the village travel we have done. And I'm sure they appreciate, like myself, I learn continuously every day new things that I'm not aware of. But I can thank them for coming out here and participating with us. And that, I'd like to recognize Debbie Tennyson, coordinator for the Bristol Bay CRP. And she's staffed here in Dillingham, and we'll discuss the process and the plan that was adopted. And people would be asked to come up to her left to testify so that we can get you on record. Please speak to the speaker as close as you can. Also, I believe there's a sign-up sheet in the back for those people that would like to testify. And if I skipped anyone, please let us know. Let Tom Wright from my staff, that's also here on a trip with us, and also Anna Mae Sorensen that has helped us put this hearing together. To thank her often for the assistance. With that, I'll try to alternate between this people that are in here actually, and also the villages that are online. I'll try to go back and forth. With that, I'll recognize Debbie Tennyson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Debbie Tennyson. I actually work as a local government specialist for the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, but since about the 18th of July, have been working quite a bit on the disaster response. It was on that date that the governor declared a disaster in both the Bristol Bay and Kuskokwim fisheries. At the same time, he asked our department to put together a coordinated response partnership that the chairman had referenced that included local agencies and entities, the municipalities that were affected by the loss of fish tax revenue, and organizations that provided services and represented people in the region. We also included in larger statewide coordinated response partnership teams the Department of Labor, Internal Revenue Service, the Department of Health and Social Services, and Division of Investments, all of whom were looking not only at long-term but also short-term needs that needed to be addressed in the region. And one of the first projects of that group was helping and coordinating efforts by the Division of Investments to work with people on their boat loans, the Internal Revenue Service, the travel to all the villages in Bristol Bay to help people with payment extension plans. Department of Labor looked into what services might be available. Health and Social Services increased their service level out for welfare programs, public assistance, and energy assistance. Almost at the same time this was going on, there was also a request put in by the governor to both to the federal government for FEMA funds, which are the emergency disaster funds that we know of most frequently with hurricanes, tornadoes, fires, and so forth. The FEMA money was always hoped to provide to fishermen a large amount of money that would be available through loans that they finance, and also would open up the opportunity for unemployment insurance to be available to individual fishermen. That was probably the best and biggest hope of the CRPs and of individual fishermen and businesses that were affected by the disaster. At the same time, there was a request put in under the Magnuson-Stevens Act asking that help be provided because this had been a failed fishery this year in Bristol Bay and Kuskokwim. That's a fairly new program and really unknown in terms of the scope of what it could provide. The language is fairly vague. The requests went in almost at the same time. They went in, you know, in late July and August. It has been an extremely long time to get a response from the federal government. It was only about a week ago that the federal government denied the FEMA request. One of the things that the CRPs really did for the state in this whole process was provide input to what plans we should be asking the federal government for. The Magnuson-Stevens Act originally went in with a request for $10 million, limited program funds to provide services to fishermen, form of energy assistance, fuel transportation. We were hearing from local people that there were concerns about fuel for subsistence and so forth. We had asked for block grants for villages to address the disaster on a local level as they saw fit, and also for tax replacement for the municipalities that really exist on those raw fish tax and shared fisheries business taxes. And those plans were developed at a local level by the CRP. It became very clear when the Commerce Department finally responded to us, the Federal Commerce Department, that there were parts of the plan that they would not accept. They really wanted to do just a loan program and nothing else. And at that time, we were still hoping for the FEMA declaration that would kick into a much more established Small Business Administration loan program for fishermen. The plan was finally worked out with Commerce just recently, and in great part to because Commerce staff came out to Bristol Bay and Kuskokwim and met with a lot of fishermen. We met with fishermen in Anchorage who were there for meetings. We met in Naknek, traveled to Clark's Point. They went out to Kuskokwim. They came here in Dillingham. They talked to a significant number of fishermen, businessmen, people representing communities, learned a lot about the region, and realized that this was not the East Coast of the United States, that there were things that could not be done or were not appropriate for our state. The CRPs met sometimes weekly, certainly monthly or bi-monthly, and continued to help provide input on what we should do in these proposals to Commerce. There was finally a plan agreed on, and it's in its final stages. Basically, we're looking for the Bristol Bay region at a loan component of about $1 million, a little bit more, looking at no interest loans, small loans for really emergency purposes, probably using the permanent fund as collateral. Also a community grant program, which would provide over $4 million to Bristol Bay communities for grants that directly or indirectly provide some sort of fisheries-related work projects, and a small amount of money for fisheries research. There was some interest in by members of the community of Coordinated Response Partnership in doing some local research on fisheries issues. The money has certainly been long in coming, and it has been very frustrating for everybody that has worked with this process, including the CRPs. I think when the Commerce people came out here, they informed people that you should never use the word federal government and FAST in the same sentence, and that's something that we've learned. Right now, we're looking at the loan program. If funding goes through from the legislature, the application should be available in the beginning of February. We're working on the grant program right now. And hopefully those applications will be out towards the end of February, March. And we know that it may be too late for communities to do work projects before fishing, but certainly some may be able to. If not, then there may be jobs available for people after fishing in local villages. The FEMA declaration has been denied. It is my understanding that the state is going to appeal that. The state also has a separate request to the Small Business Administration for its loan program. A lot of these federal programs wait for one or the other to be approved or denied, so it just drags on the process. But where we are right now is literally putting the final touches to the application that goes to the federal government and working out the details and getting those projects and programs out to the regions affected. It has been a long, involved process. There's clearly been, in this one Magnuson Act program, not enough money to address the impact of this disaster. It has also been had to be shared between two regions and two separate kinds of fisheries and problems. And there's been a lot of cooperation and a lot of working out of problems and details between those two regions. And it's really, to everybody's credit, that they work very hard. There are still, we know, lots of fishermen that are in trouble, and Jim Sanders and myself speak to them still almost daily. And there's, at this point, we're still hoping that there's some relief from FEMA or from the Small Business Administration loan program. But at this time, we're looking at just the Magnuson Act money. I think so.
Thank you. As we proceed, there'll be some questions. I'll open it for questions of the committee. And as the testimony from the affected individuals here in the area occur, we will call you up to respond to some of the questions. We thank you for a good overview there. Before I open it up for the committee questions, I'd like to acknowledge Speaker Gail Phillips as allowing us as a committee to travel and to address this situation out here. And she didn't have her office open for us to, and I've kept her up to date as much as I can in the progress of this plan development throughout this fall. Also, for the record, I'd like to enter the two letters, letter dated January 23 from the Bristol Bay Borough, addressed to this committee, and also a letter dated January 23 from, letter dated January 23 from Bristol Bay Borough, another letter dated January 21 from Lake and Peninsula Borough addressed to this committee. They're entered as part of the proceedings and record for this committee. So with that, I'll open up the members for their comments or questions to the plan as presented. Representative Gary Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Debbie, I do have a question, and I don't know if you can give me a good answer at this time or not. And believe me, this is not aimed at you, but I'm wondering about the government's process in this and how they're doing things, and maybe you could enlighten me on it. You know, I came here about 35, 36 years ago. I come from the Midwest, where there's a lot of farms. And we have a situation in the farming countries where you have bad harvests, you know, every few years. And it seemed like all the money that the government ever provided for that went directly to the farmers in the form of loans and long-term loans that had real low interest and didn't have to be paid back until they had a good harvest. And it seems like it's pretty much the same situation here, except most all of this money is going to be going into local government entities. Is this a change in philosophy by the federal government, or is this just the way we do things out on this end of the country, or what's changed here? I don't understand why more of this money isn't going to the individuals that are affected.
Well, you're right. I might have a hard time answering that, because each day I seem to know less and less about how the federal government operates. But apparently there are not the kind of programs for fishermen that there are for farmers. And I don't know if that's a lesson for us as fishermen to follow. When the state tried to explore what options were available, and I think in the beginning, when the governor first came out here, that he and all the fishermen that met with him thought that there would be some kind of relief like there were for farmers. And all they found was the FEMA declaration and this Magnuson-Stevens Act declaration. And the actual history of the Magnuson-Stevens Act was that the first go-around with the language in that act didn't even provide for this kind of failure. And this was fairly new language put in by, I believe, Senator Kerry from Massachusetts when he had tried to get some relief for his fishermen on the East Coast. And there was no coverage for the kind of problems they were having. So what we're left with is basically very, very limited programs that are available to fishermen. And the language now is so vague that there were arguments and discussions about how money would even be appropriated or how it could be used. And I think one of the results is going to be some fine-tuning and re-examination of the language in Magnuson Act. I think there's a realization at the governor's office that this clearly doesn't meet the needs of Alaskan fishermen, and I think at our congressional level that they're concerned too.
I just want you to understand that I don't want to be one of you looking at gift horse in the mouth. You know, I mean, this is better than nothing, but it's just too little, too late, and doesn't seem to be directed the way it really should have been.
Absolutely.
We're still glad we're getting something.
And they were emphatic, the commerce people, the federal commerce people, that they were not going to allow Magnuson Stevens Act funds to go in some way, shape, or form directly to fishermen. The fishermen, I see some of them in the room here today that met with them, they said, we're not giving money to fishermen, period. That's why they immediately eliminated any kinds of the energy assistance or fuel grants. The only thing that they felt comfortable with was a loan program. And there really was not very much money in the program for that. That's right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Sanders. Representative Dyke.
Thank you. Debbie, in both the letters here from Lake and Penborough and the Bristol Bay Borough, they mentioned that the governor had stated he would propose emergency tax relief for the municipality. Do you know what tax they're talking about relieving? It's on page 3 of the Lake and Penborough's. And if the governor or the administration had anything working on that?
The original plan that was submitted to Commerce asked for municipal tax replacement. And that's the taxes that the municipalities ordinarily collect on either a specific raw fish or on a shared fisheries business tax. That was denied by Commerce. They would not do that at all. I believe the governor's office is now looking at least providing to those same municipalities, including the boroughs that ordinarily get the fish tax, the other part of the shared fisheries business tax that ordinarily the state keeps. My understanding is that is in addition to the supplemental being asked for as a match for this Magnuson Stevens money. In other words, if Bristol Bay Borough, if the state collects its 3 to 6% in the business tax on the fisheries, they provide about 50% of that back to the borough. What the governor is proposing that because of this disaster and their need to run schools and police and water, sewer, or whatever, all of those cities that get those revenues, that instead of just 50% being provided back, that the entire pot is being provided back, all of the fisheries business tax.
Please continue.
So, as far as you know, the governor is still on that course, still planning on doing that?
That's my understanding.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Representative
Debbie, I've heard numerous testimony from fishermen's villages in Bethel down here. I anticipate hearing the same thing here. Folks not having enough money to gear up to go fishing next year. And the money that's going to be provided here will come after this fishing season, so that's not going to help things. I'd like to get some idea of ballpark figure. What we could say is an average person, average fisherman might need. And then the number of people for bed holders that need it. So we can have some kind of a concept of how much money needs to be provided and whether the legislature can root around and hopefully find a pot someplace and we can offer some relief. But until I get some kind of a figure, you know, we can't go on the up end, of course, but anybody have an idea what that might be?
I think that we commonly talk about $15,000 needed to fish during the season. Insurance, groceries, fuel, and so forth. That might vary, you know, go down to 10 or so, but an example, most of the 30-foot gill netters pay $4,000 in insurance alone. So you start adding on those other costs, and there's some fixed costs for insurance and fuel and gear and groceries.
Boat storage,
yeah. One of the major canneries here in Dillingham last year said that their average fisherman's debt to them was $14,000 for drift and $10,000 for set netters. So not only do they have gear up costs for next year, but they're looking at debts that have not been retired at this point from last year. And it's not at all clear at this point how canneries and processors are going to handle that, how much credit they're going to extend to their fishermen coming into this next year, especially coupled with some very bad news about the value of the fish and the dollar-yen ratio and what the price might be next year, and compounded with that, what looks like not a very good price for herring as well. So this year could be really difficult. I don't know how to explain that debt that people already have in terms of just adding that to the cost or how it's going to
received testimony that herring fishermen are covered under this act. Crew members tendered, and it's difficult to get a handle on what can we do, if possible, for these people and what kind of figures we need to try to make these people able to go out and try to fish again. Anybody got any ideas on that?
You know, I honestly don't know that I do at this point. You know, there had been that hope that a Small Business Administration loan program would help, and also that unemployment insurance, which would be cash to fishermen and crew, would be of assistance. And that's just hovering on the horizon there, and you know, in my view, doesn't look good at this point. And we know that these jobs programs are coming too late. We hope that some of them can go into the villages before fishing season, but the way things have dragged on, it doesn't look that way. I don't have any particular ideas at this point. Maybe the folks here do.
Thank you for recognizing Jewel. Can you repeat those figures you talked about for startup cost per drift and set netting in place?
Usually about 15,000 for drift. And I'm not a set netter, looking in the audience here.
The estimate that you used a while ago?
10, 15
would probably cover both.
Thank you.
Debbie, when we were in Bethel, we heard from a couple of communities that were fairly sore because they got left out of the process. They felt that they should have been included. Do you run into any of that here, or all of the communities covered that should have been covered under the declaration?
In Bristol Bay, all of the villages are included in the declaration, including the Chignecks, and up around the Iliana Lake area and west of Tokyak.
Before we start to hear your testimony, I would like to get on the teleconference line and make sure I acknowledge other legislators that may be on the line. Is Representative Carl Moses or his office on the line?
Mr. Chairman, this is Bryce Edgman. Indeed, we're on line down here in Juneau, and I would note that you have another staff member, Pat Walker, on line too.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Mr. Edgman. And Senator Lyman Hoffman, or his staff. If I skipped anyone, any other legislators online, please let me know. I appreciate your participation. Thank you again. We'll go to Mr. McClure. Please state your name for the record, please.
Dave McClure, Executive Director of the Bristol Bay Housing Authority in Billingham. We provide homes to approximately 400 families in Bristol Bay. That represents probably a third of the housing stock in Bristol Bay. Last summer, when this first occurred, we came up with a program ourselves internally to help reduce the homeowners' payments. To let you know how our agency is affected, we've had approximately 70 of those 400 folks that have qualified for payment reductions, and we've done that basically in-house. What I'm starting to see are requests from the villages to shut utilities off, and these are primarily on some folks that probably came into the season last year on a bad note, and they're probably the first folks that we're hearing about. Generally in a year, we would hear that request maybe two or three times out of 400 homes. Now we're up to about a dozen requests for folks to respond to us to evict people because they're on payment utilities, which are supposed to do by federal law. And again, I like to stress, most communities try to work with individuals to the most extent they can, but not getting to the point where that's reached a high enough point where they have to react to that. So our agency is very much in support of the proposed program, although it is perhaps too little too late. It will certainly help the cash flow of those folks and help them to deal with their day-to-day living expenses, which they're now getting to the point with oil, especially utilities, fuel, electricity. Again, we're starting to see that. Also, I think it's very important for us collectively as a group, the state, the participants here, that we react on the federal level and get some amendments to the Magnuson Fisheries Act, so that perhaps in the future that the Small Business Administration type activities and the emergency unemployment, that maybe those could be addressed in this Fisheries Act, and we put the FEMA declaration wouldn't have to be the trigger for that. And if we could have some kind of mitigating circumstances in the federal act, this is first run application under that, so perhaps we can work with this process collectively. We can make that happen at the federal level. So that's the only comments I have. Other folks here are much better describing the natural need than most fishermen.
Thank you. Questions, Representative
Tyson? Yeah, thank you. Probably you're the wrong person to ask, but because you're getting these requests about utilities being shut off, do the local utilities and the local government, have they in the past made some provision where they can continue to keep the service going and get paid out of next year's fish ticket receipts or permanent fund dividends or something?
Yeah, I have been an administrator of village myself, and to respond to my experience is generally yes, and I think that's true for most people out there now, that the ones that we're seeing and the ones who are refusing to do that for are the people that came in with the bad credit, for example, or I had a debt load coming into this season prior to the bad season. So it's those are the first group of folks that we have to react to now.
Okay. Continue, please.
Yeah, if I may continue, and this is questions off the subject, but when we were talking with folks about Bethel, is the housing that is being financed through various government programs here technologically appropriate for this climate?
Yes, and for that stock that's been built within the last 8 years, I'd say yes. Now, for prior to that, there's some real problems out there, and we acknowledge those. But the stuff that's being built in the last 5 years, primarily with the last council funding, is their standards when those have been implemented. The stuff is appropriate.
So the Alaska housing, if I may continue,
please continue.
Alaska housing's standards allow for construction that's very appropriate for these conditions.
That's correct.
Good. Thank you.
Any other questions? If not, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
At this time, I would like to recognize former Representative Joel McGill. Please come up and present your testimony.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay, for the record, I'm Joe McGill, and a commercial fisherman, and I'm still president of one of our surviving fishing groups. That's our herring co-op. We got about 90 members yet. And because of my past and everything, I hear a lot. I'm one of the first people, I think, that they approach, even the head of deputy and something like that, I can tell her. And I've been in office. I've had experience with it when we had these poor seasons before, when it was pretty regular and everything.
And that conference goes on because there's people.
And I thought that these things would be a little simpler to handle. But I hear stories from fishermen, like the fellow says he's supporting his wife and several grandkids on a Social Security check and having a bad time. And I don't know many fishermen that can even afford to gear up, or I don't know how a lot of them even got through the winter from the stories I hear. You can see it in town. Got the ones that have a little check, they come in and buy groceries. And they don't even party in town. I miss my friends coming in to party. But I somehow think that, I hate to see this, that the local governments, I'm a past mayor, and been the legislature to handle this money, and I know how it works. I'd hate to see you give the money to local governments and stuff like that. And I don't hear we shouldn't need it. It should be kind of safe because the people's already got their pay raises, the city officials. So it shouldn't make they But you give them this amount of money, and like I said, I've been there. I've been a mayor and stuff, and I know what happens when they give money and need more. You got the whole bunch of them down there crying to you. But I think if you just take that $2.3 million and forget this federal share and stuff and dole it out to fishermen, everyone would be better off. Look, you get a loan program, they have to pay it back. And I know myself, of course I haven't said much about it, but there's another outfit wants to come in for herring. They want big herring and 3 1/4 inch mesh and stuff like that. Most of the fishermen I know don't have it. And I asked them if they'd be able to finance. They said, well, they didn't think they could, but they'd be able to pay for the fish. And they want me to get a list of names and stuff like, you know, because I know the people and stuff like that. It makes it hard for them. I think fishermen's one that's hurt, not the local government. The only local government I know that made any gesture to help their fishermen is the Bristol Bay Borough. And that borough's run by fishermen. I guess they're electrical over there. They did give them some kind of, you know, lien or some way to make their electric bills less and on their taxes and stuff. But I just can't see letting the government handle it. I think if they just take that $2.3 million they can add anything to it if you get the legislature to appropriate it and help the fishermen that way. We've already lost the winter on it. I never knew that the Magnuson Act had this in it. I should have followed it closer, but I've even testified on that Magnuson Act. I thought that was a conservation act, not an outfit that made create a bunch of confusion as all this is did. And a lot of people are disappointed. I know I am. I'm not speaking myself. I'm one of the lucky ones. I get a Social Security check. You know, I'm 74 years old. But that's why I can still afford to fish. But there's a lot of them that's got families and everything. Some of them even poor health than me and stuff like that. That you know, they can't work. They say, well, there's jobs out on the floaters and stuff like that. But there's no fellow poor health. Get that 12 hours a day handling frozen boxes of fish and stuff like that if they're lucky enough to get a job. I think it's overdue for something to be done, and probably if I was handling this, I just forget that.
Hello.
That federal money and see what I can do with the rest of it. I think the state's remiss in not doing something now. They come in and promise it. That's one of the worst parts, when they come in and promise it, and then nothing's done. People sit and wait for it. They don't try doing anything else, because a lot of them don't want to leave their families, and I think the state's. Whoever's responsible, I shouldn't say the state, because a lot of it's, from what I gathered, local government saying that they should have it, stuff like that. And I just, like I said, I've been there. I've seen how it works and stuff like that. I've had to, years ago on these programs myself. You know, we had Egan for governor and stuff like that, and you could get it done. But, see, I'm disappointed. I think a few hundred fishermen that I've talked to, real disappointed. A lot of my friends are. I haven't heard any good comments on this yet from anyone. And I talk to a lot of people. That's about all I do is sit around BS anyone. And I just support the fish people. I heard some comments on it there. And I would do something to get something moving. I think if it was me, if I had to say so, I'd forget that federal money and try. If you get the legislature to appropriate a little more money, try doing some of that $2.3 million and get some for the fishermen. Because this spring we're going to be screwed. And fellow fishermen have come up here from out in the States, and they seem to have all the advantage when it comes to getting financed and everything, maybe because they got year-round jobs and stuff like that. They'll have the right gear because they want the bigger herring and everything, and some of us have to be sitting on the beach. But some members of them used to be, well, they can't pay their dues of our organization. It's been several years since they could sell a herring. And now I see them, that there might be a chance this year if they can get the gear. Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you, Representative.
Joe.
Speaker Phillips is online.
Thank you. I'd like to, Mr. McGill, Representative Dyson, question for you. I would like to welcome Speaker of the House, Representative Gail Phillips, to make a few comments. We're just beginning to take some testimony here. We have addressed two people so far. But go ahead and please make your comments.
Okay, thank you very much, Representative Ivan. And thank you very much to the members of the committee and yourself for going out to the Kuskokwim and Yukon region to talk with the people about what the effect of this has on them. And I certainly appreciate the remarks from the public. I'm sorry I can't be with you today. I do have another meeting that I have to speak at in just a few minutes. But I wanted to express to you that Representative Ivan has kept our office and our caucus informed of the issue ever since the disaster occurred this summer. He's been in constant contact with us to let us know what was going on and about the plans that were coming out of Washington and that need to be done with the state as far as addressing this disaster. And we in the House are waiting for the recommendations from Representative Ivan and his committee following their visit to the Bethel and Dillingham region. We're very concerned about the long-term economic effects this region will face due to the diminished returns in 1997. The economic disaster also greatly affects the urban centers as well. Cities such as Anchorage, Bethel, Dillingham, all over will not get as many dollars as they have received in the past from rural residents who spend a tremendous amount of money in these urban areas. The fishermen in my area on the Kenai Peninsula and Homer are affected by what happened in Bristol Bay. And it's important that the plans that we put into place be used to jumpstart the economies in the Kuskokwim and Bristol Bay communities that were affected by these poor returns in last summer's fishing. We are giving consideration now to introducing separate appropriation legislation in order to provide quicker assistance. But we will wait until the report from the committee before we proceed. I have every confidence in Representative Ivan and the committee that they will take your concerns and bring them to us in Juneau, and we will proceed from there. Anyway, thank you very much to everybody that has made it a point to come out. I know it's hard to come out on a Saturday especially, but I appreciate very, very much your part in helping us solve this issue. And thank you very much, Representative Ivan.
Likewise here, thank you on behalf of people and communities in the Bristol Bay area. Thank you very much for coming on board.
Okay. I'll see you back in Juneau.
All right.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
This is Representative Ogan speaking.
Go ahead.
Was Representative Dyson waiting for a question at... If so, I'll yield to him, and I have one when it's appropriate time.
Yes, why don't we take you up first, because we have Fred here. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like a question of the witness. I apologize, I didn't catch your name. Can I get your name again, please?
Mr. McGill, Joe McGill.
Joe McGill. Mr. McGill, what would you think of using this money to buy back out-of-state fishing permits? According to my calculation, I think we could, if we used the money that was allocated to Bristol Bay alone, which I believe be about $4.5 million, I understand that permits are going to down to about 100,000, 110,000 apiece. I could probably buy 40 or 45 permits back from out-of-staters and reduce some of the out-of-state competition. Would that be something that the community might get behind?
Yeah, thank you. I think the community would get behind them, but it really don't help the fishermen now. There is.
Yes, sir. I realize that in the short term it doesn't help them, but in the long term, if we can reduce the number of people that are competing for the fish, I mean, I think we all realize that the long term outlook for fishing is not too good with the increased competition of farm fish. And if we can reduce the number of people, especially the out-of-staters that are fishing, even if it's a small increment to start with, and maybe look at a program of buybacks in the future, it might be something that Alaskans can get a bigger piece of the pie. And right now we're going to throw Band-Aids on it, and with $7 million of the Band-Aids, and it doesn't really fix anything.
Yes, I understand what you're saying and stuff. There is too many permits. I'd like to see some of them, a lot of them bought back. But I think that we've, in the past, some in the back of my mind, we've been through that, talking to buy back and permits and everything. And I think the cheapest ones that buy is these people that are desperate at the present time to live here. Most of them from out of state got other businesses and stuff. At least they tell you they have. I don't know. They'll sit all day telling you about their big business out in the state. Yet they'll steal salt shakers out of the restaurants and everything. But I think now you can buy local permits a lot cheaper. I'd like to see every out-of-state buy permit disappear.
Well, on that note, maybe a loan program, maybe we could direct this money into a loan program so more Alaskans could buy some of these permits, lower 48ers. I don't know if we can legally structure it that way, but I think it'd be worth looking at.
Yes, it'd be worth looking at, but I think we've been through you check with the Limited Entry Commission and find out. I think that's been brought up before, and I think there's been legal opinions on it, if I remember right. This whole meeting tends to be cold. When I seen Ivan this morning, Representative Ivan this morning, I realized what's happened. I didn't get a chance to do a lot of research on it. He always catches me by surprise.
I apologize for that. Scott?
I get up early in the morning to get one up on Ivan.
Thank you, Scott. You have more questions?
No, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Jump in if you do have some, Representative Dyson.
Do you know of any of our local, the processors here in the Bay that are close to bankruptcy or are liable to not make it through this downturn?
Well, I can say what I gather from what I hear from some of the floaters is that they're in trouble. I hear different ones being in trouble. I know after my processor closed down last year, I sold some fish that I'm not paid for yet, and I hear the fellas in trouble. I hear that, but yet I still get word that new ones want to come in.
If I may continue. I know that some of the suppliers I buy from said that only about 20% of the fishermen were paying for the electronics or the nets and stuff that they bought over in the Neck King Salmon area. Do you know if it's similar here, that suppliers have got a large accounts receivable?
Yes, I understand it is. From what I hear from talking to fishermen, and I know the one supplier is trying to, they usually do, is trying to count for, make up for the ones that can't pay by sending bigger bills and things like that. But that always happens.
Thank you.
But like I say, you were talking this season, but, I followed it. I just finished my 50th season fishing. And I looked at all the records, I've been interested, did all the research I could. And from what I remember, and going back for years, we have a drop in the number of fish this year. And regardless of what their forecast is, usually it goes down for several years. And you probably learned that too. And I don't think this will be our first year with the, with the poor fishing. You see that, different system. If that Kwajak, if you're fishing the other side, if that thing goes, we are in trouble. That's 60% traditional, 60% of fish in Bristol Bay, and that's where the money's been made for that. That's where I usually fish. And they've been digging it the last few years, and Kwajak's been bad.
You've been smart.
I'd like to thank you, recognize Joe Ryan and then Rich Stewart.
Joe, you've mentioned you have 50 years, so you've got a pretty good knowledge of what's been going on there. We've heard some criticisms and of the Department of Fish and Game, and then we've also heard people asking us to give them more money to do a better job so they could, management, so that there'd be an assurance of fish. What's your overall assessment of how the Fish and Game programs work down here?
Well, they have money for the smoke programs and more research tagging programs to see where the fish is going to go. And they used to do more work on intercept fisheries, which now they don't seem to have money to do as where the custom wind view gone. Crystal Bay suffered for. They definitely, and I would even, a lot of people disagree with me, like to see more and stricter enforcement. But that smoke program, count the smoke going out, your test fishing program, outside, see how many fish is coming in with help of on. It gives a fella a chance. If I hear of a bump season, I start mending my own nets and doing some of my own work, which I don't like to do. And try cutting back. It's like this year, well, that's supposed to be a good year and stuff. And it didn't happen. But definitely, I think that the division should have more people out there. It should be doing more. And now, of course, we're talking to salmon, but it's an example. On our herring fishery out here, I think we used to have biologists doing the test, you know, the road test, seeing if the fish ripe yet and everything. We had several biologists out there. Now when they got one or something, if they have, still have that. And then they depend on the fishermen to do their test fishing. Of course, you know, we understand fishermen are not all that honest and stuff like that, except for me. And but anyhow, they'll go out there and they'll catch some fish and they'll say they're ripe yet. And they throw it open. The fish might be a couple of percent lower than they should be. And just that one few hours and stuff, that costs the state your raw fish tax. The fish will make $1 million or something. They'll pay for a lot of biologists. And I think they should have more people out there. You're going, I don't know how some of them survive here. We've got some good dedicated people out there. I really like just left this year to go from commercial to sport fishing. I just don't understand why a guy do that unless he's real disappointed. Left here and went to Sitka. This is the big one to manage here, you know. Definitely, I think they should have more money.
Thank you.
Representative Hill.
This concept of buying back permits. And it reminds just a comment. Buying back permits, you know, is something I think that you mentioned has been talked about and discussed. And it probably is something that needs to continue, and at some point action has to follow. But you know, in the face of a disaster where people, individuals, are looking at being evicted from their homes, not being able to put food potentially on the tables for their families. I can't be convinced that it's a wise investment in the short term, using this disaster money to buy those permits back when there are individuals out there that really need those dollars. And I just wanted to make that comment. Thanks.
Yes, I can understand what you're saying. Right now it's an emergency. Last summer it was a small emergency. Now it's a big one. But we do have too many permits, and original research done that on the limit of permits in Bristol Bay, we went back to the sailboat days. And the peak of the sailboats was slightly over 800 fishing boats in Bristol Bay. But now there's 1,800 boat permits in Bristol Bay. But of course, we used to catch a lot of fishing in the sailboats because there wasn't much competition, but heck, one of these boats would run right over, well, heck, they'd run over the top of the regular boat and stuff. So, you know, you just don't have a chance. Way more folks than they should have. But then that's long term. Right now there's an emergency. I think that it should get the money directly to the fishermen. I guess I've just seen too much, you know. I did spend five terms in Juneau and three different times as the mayor of this town and fishing organization. I always lose out. I always seem to take a beat, but I'm still fighting.
Don't give up.
Thank you. Before we close, I'd like to just make a comment to the point that my colleague from Crosby made. We're going to hear some of the testimony, some recommendations to address the current emergency need, and also some recommendations to address the long-term need. And I believe I welcome the statements made by Representative Scott Ogden about the possibility of looking at that in the long term, buying back as many permits as possible. And that could be part of a long term package. I think we can get from the situation we're in
and it's going to take a lot of coordination. We will disagree a lot among ourselves, but I think it's a beginning. With that, I'd like to thank you again for your testimony and for joining us this morning.
And I'd like to thank you, gentlemen, for coming, and I know you got your work cut out for you, and I don't envy it. Anytime I never contribute anything or something, I'm free to call on you as long as I don't have to travel.
Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, I'd like to go to Togiak, and I understand we have Mr. Moses. Critch, would you make your comments, please?
Yes, Ivan, this is Moses in Togiak. I gave out all my ideas to you guys yesterday, but still, you know, I think we should... I still support the loan program because of its fast fix for some of the people here in Togiak, that the block grant's not going to be in effect maybe until late this spring or next fall. So, you know, there's no interest on the loan program. That would be an effective way right now. That's all I have on this end.
We thank you for your comment there. Are there any questions from the committee or comments? If not, thank you again. I think we gained a few pounds there in your community, but we thank you for all the nice food and the reception you provided to us. I'd like to then go back here to Dillingham. Let me check with these names here. There's a mark where you want to testify. Some people may change their mind also, but we have Robert Christensen, I understand, Ford Hayden, who's with us. Would you like to make a testimony? If not, yeah, thank you. We'll also recognize Boris Cosbrook from Paraville. He's also with us here. I understand he's observing. And Debris Val Anguson, and if you want to make comments, do. Yes. Again, please state your name, address, telephone number, if possible, for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman?
Hello?
Mr. Chairman, this is Peter Christopher from New Suyak. We'd like to be recognized as one of the communities, too, that would like to testify.
Yes, sir. We will do that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chairman Ivan, my name is Val Anguson. I'm a fisherman that lives in Dillingham that has fished in most all the districts in Mitchell Bay. I was born and raised in the Naknek area. I'd say hello to the rest of the legislators as well. Sorry. Welcome, Bryce Edgman and Juno. I wish Carl Moses was here. I wish Carl was listening. As the gentleman pointed out earlier, the people in the Naknek area and in the Quijack drainage area are hurting pretty bad financially. Frankly, the season over there has been a disaster compared to the seasons elsewhere. I've listened, probably the simplest thing I could say that would make most sense to me as to the magnitude of the problem here in Bristol Bay, and perhaps in Cuttingwood and in the Chinook areas, has been listening to the radio last summer out on the fishing grounds. I've listened to a senator that was from Manakota, fishing over the Agushik section. She was talking to the regional fisheries manager here, the commercial fisheries manager, asking for another opening. It was towards the end of the season, and she told him that she had she didn't even have food or oil for the campsite. And the county wouldn't even send her back home. I mean, how bad can this get? And that's probably the worst case scenario that I've physically heard as to an explanation of this disaster here in Crystal Bay. I don't think it can get any worse than that. And I think, from what I've read, you folks went to Togiak, perhaps. You were planning on going to New York, I'm not sure. But all in all, thank the legislative member for coming off here to Crystal Bay, taking the time, as you mentioned earlier. In a nutshell, I think this is a wake-up call that you indicated earlier, you alluded to, that we needed to do some long-term things here in Bristol Bay. If one looks at the long-term record going back to the 50s, 40s, and whatnot, salmon comes in cycles. And last year, yes, it may have been a El Nino fluke, but I think everybody's been waiting for the day when it peaked out and started going the other way. And from the response that, frankly, from the response from the various governmental agencies that are able to help, from the timeliness of their response, I would work on making Bristol Bay a little bit more independent, because what's happening is happening way too slow. Remember, I revert back to the radio conversation I listened to when the senator was talking to the fishery manager here that she couldn't afford to go home. This is January. That was in July. At the very least, one other item. I received several calls from at least one local business here, a supply business. They had less customers, and they actually used the fishing income to supplement their business as well. And that they wanted to pay for their inventory. They wanted to replenish their inventory in their supply business. And they wanted to find out how and who was doing anything about the declared disaster. Last July, I had subsequently called the BB&A here to request some information. The information I received was that in early January, yet the governor had not requested the supplemental appropriation from the legislature. The disaster happened in July. Talking about the federal government moving slow. Hey, they got the bucks. It's done. You know, I mean, I've never seen the federal government move so fast in my life in terms of appropriating money. Mr. Sanders, who's worked with Debbie, I believe, I heard earlier, has gone through the disaster here in Bristol Bay in 1973 and 1974. He's familiar with the Bristol Bay villages, and he knows what it's like to have a poor fishing season out here. I'm sure he can really appreciate what we're going through right now. At the very least, a request to get the Small Business Administration to do something. And up to this point, I'm sure it's been mostly rhetoric. I would request closer coordination from the governor's staff with the legislature, and if it has to be this committee, be it this committee. The rumors I've been hearing, this is Representative Ivan's area, and this is Representative Moses' area. You've been running into some brick walls in your request for cooperation and assistance for people here in Bristol Bay. We don't need that here. And we're beyond that. You know, we're beyond politics here. So I wish the Democrats and the Republicans and the Independents and you know, take their hats off and look at the situation and deal with it. Okay. The FEMA response, I mean, what do we want? We got no fish. What else do they need to know? This is a natural disaster. How natural can it get? We got no fish. They didn't need a study. I mean, to me, that's bickering. I read in a newspaper the other day of a southeastern Alaska community writing checks to their residents. Some of you folks may know who that is. I don't recall exactly who that is, but they're writing checks to their residents, probably with money from FEMA for the losses in the timber industry. So they're doing it. It's done. They understand what it means to respond. But for some reason, when it comes out here, I don't know what it is. There's a problem here. Communication, I think. I would urge the governor's staff. I know you're not the governor's staff. It may not be appropriate for me to say this, but I would urge the governor's staff to work with you, Ivan, and work with Carl Moses to get the show on the road here. I've listened to one legislator talk about a Band-Aid, that this money, the federal money and the state money combined, roughly 9-point-some-odd million, would only be a Band-Aid. What about the lady that was talking on the radio last summer? I couldn't even afford to go home to Matacota for my Gucci. I mean, that's how bad can you get? I have no suggestions how to dole out the money to respond to people like her. Whatever it is, respond to people like her. Those are the people that are hurting. People with no jobs. And that fish for a living. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'd like to make a little comment before I recognize Joe Ryan.
You folks, I can be kind of happy that you do have Representative Ivan. I represent an area, Northeast Anchorage, and I have a lot of poor people in my district, and some people are pretty well off. And basically, my job is to represent those people first and then the state next. And Representative Ivan asked me to come down here. Help me get a better understanding of what you folks are going through. And he's a Democrat, I'm a Republican, but we're working together on this because people in Alaska have a problem and have needs. And it's only because he's such a pretty nice guy and we get along so well that I was willing to come out here and you know, visit all the villages. I've got a lot of other things to do. And my office take care of people I represent. But I'm pretty lucky to have a guy like this representing him. Get us all to work together. We're more than happy to help out whenever we can.
Thank you. And also, just my general comment that whenever a legislator, for example, in my case, represents a district, we try to work on issues in our district as much as we can. But when we become in a committee like this, as a member of a committee, we represent the state of Alaska. There's no boundary or district. We are a committee of the legislature that address each and every person, be it Barrow, be it Hotsview, Southeast. We address those issues as such, and I just wanted to respond to those comments that were made earlier. Please, we try to do the best we can with what we got, and try to work together in addressing this disaster if we all come together. Thank you very much for your very good remarks. And any other questions? If not, thank you again.
You're
welcome. I'd like to head on over to... I believe we have George Pleasant at Twin Hills.
Yes?
Yes, would you make your testimony or comments and please state your name? Address or telephone number for the record, please. Continue.
I have none.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, and if you do, please let me know and we'll go ahead and take you up later. And thank you for your
participation. Yeah, I'm Castellano.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no. It's been a while, George. Then let's go to New Halen, Joan Wassily. Do you have New Halen online? not, if they can come on later, just let us know. Port Hyden, Laura Christensen. I'm going to have the folks check out the teleconference line here, but I'll go back to Dillingham and recognize Mr. Hefferly, Terry Hefferly from Bristol Bay Native Association.
Thank you, Representative Ivan, members of the Host Community and Regional Affairs Committee. I appreciate your coming out here and spending several days with us. I know it's a busy time here for you, and we appreciate it. For the record, my name is Terry Hefferly. I work for the Bristol Bay Native Association. I think that this desperate situation that we have here in Bristol Bay can be best summarized by just saying that the response has been too little, too late. I think that while people in federal agencies and people in fish biologists are still trying to figure out just exactly what happened, I think that many people, including myself, fear that this past summer is not the last that we're going to see of the desperate situation in the fishing industry here in Bristol Bay. As Joe McGill indicated, poor runs seem to tend to come in a series, and the price that's currently being offered for our fish is not good, and the prognosis is not good. I guess what I'm getting to is that the response to this situation has been totally inadequate, and I think that it's incumbent on us, and hopefully you, to take steps to correct our ability to respond to this kind of a situation, so that it can be adequately addressed here in Bristol Bay if it happens again, or in other places in Alaska if it happens, or elsewhere in the country. I think that when this situation first happened, we saw that there were some immediate needs. Some of those have been talked about here today. People's need to get fuel to carry them through the winter, to keep the lights on in their houses. People being able to get home from the fishing grounds and to put food on the table. Well, that was in August, and this is January. We're told that any kind of a response is quite likely to be February or March in terms of meeting people's immediate needs. We bombed. There have been efforts that have been made by the Bristol Bay Housing Authority and by the Bristol Bay Native Association and by the Bristol Bay Borough to try to do what they can to address the situation. But in terms of a real response to deal with people's immediate needs, we have failed. In terms of a little bit longer run approach, it was immediately apparent that what fishermen needed was not simply the ability to borrow money that they went in the hole this year. That what was necessary was long-term, as Representative Sanders indicated, happens in the Farm Bill, long-term low-interest loans to help people recapitalize their fishing businesses. Talking with people that are much cleverer with numbers than I,
I've been told that it will take most people in the industry 8 years to begin to recover from this disastrous season. The newspapers tell us that it took an $80 to a $100 million bite out of our economy. Well, we had hopes that FEMA might be able to provide us with low-interest, long-term loans so that fishermen could take an overall approach and look at recapitalizing in a way that would enable them to make an app, to get squared away for the future, and to that what didn't happen. And I guess that we'd also hope that FEMA would be able to provide disastrous unemployment insurance, that would provide unemployment insurance for those individuals that do not generally qualify, captains and crew. I'm happy that the governor is pursuing an appeal to the FEMA declaration, but once again, it's quite likely to be too late. We need to try to effect some changes in the way that we respond to disasters and the way that the federal government responds to disasters. This situation could not have come at a worse time, I think, for many communities in Western Alaska. The advent of welfare reform and the need placed on individuals to get jobs, workfare, even community service jobs if there are no paid employment in their community. That requirement, coupled with the disastrous fishing season, has highlighted some glaring inadequacies in our system. First of all, to have a safety net for people that need one, and second of all, to begin to develop employment skills and opportunities for people outside the fishing industry. The state of Alaska has no AFDC office or employees in all of Bristol Bay. The Department of Labor exists for a month or two in the summertime to serve as a labor broker for the fishing industry, but for the rest of the year it doesn't exist. The Department of Community and Regional Affairs Child Care Program does not have a presence in Bristol Bay. All of those things are needed if we're going to try to help people find employment or skills to get employed outside the fishing industry. They don't exist. I'd like to talk for just a minute about the lack of jobs and the dependence on the fishing industry. We did a study last year about this time. We being the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation and the Bristol Bay Native Association, we knew that the income statistics and the employment statistics that we see the federal government and the state government using are bogus numbers. We did a survey we surveyed every household in Bristol Bay and we had a 57% response. That survey told us that 30% of the households in Bristol Bay are totally dependent on the fishing industry for all of their income. So when you listen to people like Representative Dyson and others talk about the fact that they came away from the season tens of thousands of dollars in the hole, you're talking about 30% of the households in Bristol Bay. 50% of the households in Bristol Bay receive the majority of their income from the fishing industry. The statistics that you see are skewed. The income statistics, the employment statistics that you see, for a lot of reasons, and if you like, we could talk about some of them. But I think that it's very important point out that income and employment in Dillingham and in the Bristol Bay Borough is completely different than income and employment in the surrounding communities. There are jobs available in the regional hubs that I just mentioned that are not available in our surrounding communities. And the income levels in those communities is substantially higher. And we could talk about the numbers if you're interested in doing that. I think that the federal response people and many of the people that have shown an interest at the state level in the disastrous fishing season very often fail to recognize how dependent we are upon the fishing industry. There are many long-term things that need to happen to strengthen the industry to help us face the challenges of the future. There are some things that you can do that you have started to do, and I would just encourage you to redouble your efforts to carry through this session of the legislature. Representative Ivan has introduced a bill that would waive the provisions of Little Davis-Bacon so that local capital projects funded by public funding would be able to pay people at local prevailing wages rather than at union scale, providing more jobs, but more importantly, local jobs for individuals that are working on projects where a disaster has occurred. I understand that the governor is asking for money to help provide something similar to disaster unemployment insurance through the state. If you can put something like that through in the early days of the legislature, it will be a great help to the people in our communities. The State Department of Fish and Game, I feel, has not responded well to this situation in terms of trying to identify what's happening. But there are people here that are far better equipped to talk about those things than I. I guess maybe I'll just stop here and thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you today.
Thank you, Mr. Hanselou. I'll start with Representative Dyson.
Thank you, Terry. I would have borrowed more money against my house to pay off some of my debts. Do many of the affected fishermen here in the area have equity in a home that they could do that, and have the banks been responsive to people taking that approach?
Much of the housing stock, I believe a third of the housing stock, Andy, in the region is public housing, and I don't think that people have that capacity to do it. One of the things I think that in terms of securing outside funding to help through this difficult time is the same problem that we experience when a limited entry permit comes on the market. Our local people often don't have the collateral. We don't have a job or an income stream outside the fishery, and it makes it a little difficult to get into the capital market, I think, for many people. And another thing is that many folks owe the canneries money before this bad season. I'm not sure if that adequately responded to your question, Michael.
The portion you didn't mention was, have the local banks been cooperative if people did have equity in their home or other property?
Yes, they have been.
Okay, thank you, Chair.
I'll go to Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, it's been my experience in life that anytime you had equity, the banks cooperate. no problem. Mr. Heffley, you seem to have a good background and be real thoughtful, and perhaps you're in a better position to comment on some of these things than some of the individual fishermen that are concentrating on the short-term problem. When you look at the long-term problem for the local fishermen, can you tell me, are there any organizations out here that are just for local fishermen? I know there's a fishermen's union, but that's all the fishermen. Is there anything here that protects and lobbies and works for just the local fishermen? And if there's not, is there a possibility that you could pull one together, that some group here could pull everybody together that's local and protect themselves from the people that come in from outside, not only from California, but people that come in from Anchorage. There's people that come in that I know, you know, make $60,000, $80,000, $100,000 a year in Anchorage. In 10 or 11 months, they come out here for a month and take a cut out of your income. Is there anything that can be done in the long run to protect yourselves against that?
Yes. There are probably 20, there were probably 2,800 drift and set Bristol Bay permits that were issued by the Limited Entry Commission 15 or 17 years ago. Of those, 1,376 were issued to Bristol Bay residents, about half. About half of those permits went to people who do not reside in Bristol Bay. They live in other places in Alaska or Bellingham or other in other states. So 15 years later, there are 935 Bristol Bay salmon permits that are held by local residents. That means that about 30%, I guess, I'm not having a difficult time doing a long division here, but about 30% of the permits have left the region. And having said what I said earlier about the importance of fishing to our economy, a 30% bite out of our ability to fish has been devastating. Along with each one of those permits that has left are probably two other jobs, two crew jobs that go along with it, two other incomes. One village upriver 10 years ago had 21 limited entry permits. Today I believe there are six. So before, where there might have been 60 jobs that were based in the fishing industry, today there are 18. That's what happened to the economy in that community. Local fishermen don't sell their limited entry permits at a rate any greater than any other fisherman. The simple fact is that we cannot compete in the capital market to buy them when they come on the market. We need to find a way to do that. We need to find a way, as you were talking earlier, for the state to retire some of those permits that are being held by outside people. My fear is that, as Joe McGill said earlier, the people that are most desperate to sell their permits are quite likely to be local people that don't have an outside job and find themselves put in the situation where they have to do it to support their families. If those permits go on the market, we're still not going to be able to keep them home. They'll go outside. They'll go to Anchorage. They'll go to Fairbanks. They'll go. We're finding that there's a whole class of Bristol Bay fishermen that are Joe's age and younger, that got permits originally when the constitutional amendment was passed, that are getting ready to retire from the fishery. And when that big age class of fishermen that have moved through this time period decide that their aches and pains and arthritis and bum fishing seasons is too much for them, those permits are going to go on the market. And I guess my fear, Representative Sanders, is that in terms of long-range problems, what's going to happen is that our children are going to be on the beach watching others fish this resource.
Well, I can say, I just hope there's some way, it seems to me there should be some way to form some kind of a co-op or something to protect yourselves. And if during good years, if you guys could put back 1% to buy permits, lease them to local people or use them locally. I don't live here. I mean, I don't know that you can do that. It looks easy from Anchorage, you know. I used to fish years ago, but we didn't have permits then. When I fished, I didn't know what a permit was.
There are fishermen's groups throughout the bay, and they serve different purposes. I think that if sat down and looked at things that could be done to try to correct that problem, that with the participation of the legislature, we might be able to do that. The Bristol Bay Native Association has had 5 meetings of a Blue Ribbon Commission that has included people like Harvey Samuelson and Yalmer Olson and former Governor Hammond and Ed Rasmussen and the chairman of the Limited Entry Commission. And we met 4 or 5 times looking at this problem, trying to find ways of addressing it. We can come up with things that appear to be a little band-aid here or take a stitch in here, but I think that there are probably some things that beyond the scope of what I feel qualified to talk about here this morning. I would hope so.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Gary. Representative
Ryan. Chair, thank you. I've been trying to get a handle on money, and every time I think that I've got everybody included, somebody else pops up. We got county workers who don't qualify under this program of events we've come up with, and yet, as prior testimony, they've shown and all they've got is a job, perhaps, seasonal at best, depending upon fishing, what kind of income. If we in the legislature decide to craft a piece of legislation to help people down here, I don't want to be leaving, you know, getting a net so big that people miss, they get through the mesh. And I need some suggestions because I don't know what it would take to help who. And perhaps, I don't know that you've got, you know, all the answers right now. But if you could come up with something, it could throw everybody in. Everybody's been affected. And give us an idea of what it would take to help tide them over.